Timmy Horan, my old teammate, loves to be introduced as double world champion. That's, I think, on the resume. Good morning to you, good sir. And we're looking forward to, well, Super Rugby kicking off AU, that is. And it's going to be an interesting season. Good morning to you.
Yeah, morning, boys. Berkey, great to be on your show. And you're doing a great job, mate. So well done. Yeah, looking forward to it. You know, rugby last year virtually went up to Christmas time, so players didn't get a lot of time off back into pre-season, and you know, there's a first trial games coming up in a couple of weeks' time. So, you know, you'd think that Dave Rennie, the Wallaby coach, is, you know, was comfortable with the way the players played last year, but he certainly needs another couple of levels up this year to lead into 2 years out from the World Cup.
How did you take last year's performance, those four test matches against Australia? You know, it hooked everyone in that first game in Wellington, and then it sort of went a bit of a slide and they got it back in Brisbane. How would you rate last year's season?
Oh, it's probably just a pass, Bertie. I think, you know, that, as you mentioned, that first game against the All Blacks was incredible. And, you know, that they, you know, I think it was 8.5 minutes of extra time the game was played for. And I think, you know, everyone thought, gee, this is the chance we can beat the All Blacks away from home. And then the next week, of course, in Auckland, we got beaten badly. And then, you know, we picked one game up in Brisbane at Suncorp Stadium. So probably the disappointing matches were against Argentina, even though Argentina played some sensational rugby and themselves beating the All Blacks as well. So it's probably a bit of a reset year for Australian rugby. There's a lot of players, you know, Michael Hooper obviously not playing for the Waratahs. And, you know, when you look at, you know, the Western Force, their second opportunity coming in. So I thought last year was pretty good, but you need, you know, and Berkey, you and I know it, there's a lot of players we talked about last year, the first-year players, like Harry Wilson, I mean, Tate McDermott, was his second year for the Queensland Reds, but those type of players, Angus Bell from the Waratahs, they need to really stand up in their second year.
Talk about the Reds, your team, Timmy. They're on a Reds to Rural tour at the moment, going around Queensland. Suliasi Vunivalu comes in there. How's Brad Thorne going? And you know, what's the scope for Vunivalu? He's played the quiet hand at the moment, but you know, he got introduced to that Wallaby scene early last year. Where's he going to play? Is he going to play wing or 13?
I think he'll probably play on the wing at this stage. I think that the big thing is that there's so many wingers in Australian rugby at the moment, really good wingers. You know, Corabetti, obviously, for the Melbourne Rebels, Vunivalu, and you've got, you know, all these other wingers that, you know, that played really well last year. And then you've got to look at Jordan Pataia, at the sensational player that he is. He's been out for a long time, last couple of years of injury. I actually think the Reds are probably better off putting him at fullback. And then, because at the moment, I think the two big positions in the back line, anyway, for Dave Rennie is number 10 and also number 15. I think those two positions moving forward, I think we're really struggling to find someone to really land those two positions and make it their own. I know James O'Connor and Matt Tamua, they're there. But when you look towards the World Cup in a few years' time, I'm not sure if Matt Tamua and James O'Connor are going to be there in 2.5 years' time for a World Cup.
Yeah. Then you look at Noah Lolesio down the Brumbies, who steered them to the victory. Are they shoo-ins to go back-to-back in this Super Rugby AU?
Yeah, well, they've got, I think, you know, Dan McKellar, the best coach in the competition. He's been there for a few years now, and I think just the way that he controls that Brumbies culture and also the patterns of play, it's really always a quick ruck ball game, but they've got their driving maul as well. And you look at these coaches now, a lot of the coaches in this competition, Berkey, now are getting a lot more experience. You mentioned, you know, Brad Thorne. It's his fourth year coaching as head coach of the Queensland Reds. And he probably, you know, last year, I think they had 6 wins a couple of years ago, 6 wins again the year before, made the final of Super Rugby AU, was very close to beating the Brumbies down there in Canberra. So, I mean, that side now, it's still a young side. It's still, like, the average age is about 22 and a half or 23 at the moment. So, you know, people like Brad Thorne as coach and Dan McCallum, these guys can really bring these players through this year.
Now, what about, I mean, you've always said to me, you test yourself against the Kiwi team. So we're playing Super Rugby AU, and then there's going to be a Trans-Tasman series after that. How will our teams fare, knowing that there was a bit of controversy at the end of last year how this competition was going to get sorted, and they were a bit sort of not forthcoming to invite us into their into their comp?
Yeah, it was interesting, wasn't it? I think you know, we're all in a new world now, aren't we, in sporting world, and And I think that it's a good opportunity for Australian rugby to not ease themselves into playing, you know, New Zealand teams, but, you know, Australian rugby gets this really good competition with Super Rugby AU, and fans can watch it free-to-air now on Channel 9 and on also on Stan. So it gives an opportunity to spread the game right across Australia and for younger kids, boys and girls, to watch the game. And then with Super Rugby AU, then you get this chance to play the top New Zealand teams. And as you know, Bergie, that's the litmus test for Australian rugby, is how you perform against the likes of the Highlanders, the Blues, and especially the Crusaders. So that's going to be a competition over 6 or 7 weeks, both in Australia and New Zealand. And it'll be, you know, it'll give Australian rugby teams time to build up to that level.
It's funny how it's been terrible. And I say good morning to you, Tim. Coronavirus across the world, but there are little things here and there that have happened as a byproduct of coronavirus, whether it be working from home or in the case of Super Rugby, where we saw a really good competition, as you said, both yourself and Matt, amongst the Australian teams. And it wasn't just tuning in to see maybe a Kiwi team running away with it at 4:30 in the afternoon on a Friday. We were watching, you know, prime time teams, and they were close matches.
Yeah, they were, Dave. I think it was Australian teams. Two Australian teams were winning each weekend, which we've never really had for a long time, because obviously we were playing each other, and it's a good opportunity. I think also the other part, boys, I think was really important, and hopefully this year we can expand on it, is the different law changes that came into the game because we could control the laws ourselves. Obviously for test matches and right across the world, World Rugby from the UK, they dictate what laws are decided in the game. Whereas when you play your own competition, we can then decide which sort of laws that we'd like to change to try and adapt the game here in Australia that's more palatable for Australian sporting followers. I mean, a lot of people in Australia love watching rugby league, love watching AFL, like watching rugby, but the laws in the game of rugby become too difficult to follow sometimes. We need the ball in play for a lot longer. So change a couple of little laws like we did last year and make the game more open. You know, I believe the scrums, I love a scrum in a game of rugby because it's a contest. It's always a contest at line-out. But if there's one scrum collapse, you allow one scrum collapse and then reset. If it collapses again, it should be a free kick, short-arm penalty to the opposition and play on, because that's what fans want. They want the ball in play a lot longer.
I love it how Tim and I talk about scrums. We've never put our head in one or pushed. And we're criticising those blokes. It's great.
Hey, Tim, I've got to ask. We've been having a bit of fun on the summer show. And we would, you know, as you probably know very well, Berkey does love a story, and he's very good at telling a yarn. But I want to hear some. Have you got anything good for our listeners on the great man beside me? Because he has been a bit Teflon this week. He's quite happy to tell about the forwards pinching teaspoons from Buckingham Palace, and you know this and that happening. What about the great man? Have you got anything good for us?
Well, no, sort of Berkey, and even the backs like to, after a game, of course, like to dress very well after the game, and you want to, because you're coming out, and usually it's, you know, when you're travelling overseas at Twickenham or at Murray Field in Scotland, you've got about a 100-metre walk from the dressing shed to the bus, so there's a lot of fans that are waiting there, and you're happy to sign autographs, and you know, but Berkey used to always, you know, away from home, used to want to make himself look pretty good walking from that sort of 100 metres to the bus. So the first thing Berkey used to do when we used to get into the dressing room before the game is try and sit next to and find the closest PowerPoint. So Berkey was the only player to bring a hairdryer in his bag to the
You're
game.
You're joking.
So, stop it. Usually towards the end, all the backs would line up. Say, Berkey, can we borrow your hairdryer as well? You know, so he looked pretty sharp after the game.
So you're in the trenches of Twickenham, and all you can hear is the hairdryer.
Yeah, it was embarrassing. Yeah.
Embarrassing. Dear. Oh, Timothy, I love it. I do have the nickname. Here's one. I'm going to sledge myself here. One of the nicknames that I had was Mash. Because I can rehash a story. So I would start. I say, boys, remember back in night? And it was usually Jeremy Paul would go, na, 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 na. So we, as we've spoken about through the week, we've been indulged in being able to do things that perhaps that other people can't. And one of those were, Timmy, you've been there to Buckingham Palace. You spent time over in the UK playing as well. How did you find that when you went over there? Was it a massive difference in the games between Northern Hemisphere and Southern Hemisphere?
Yeah, at the stage, I mean, I went over in sort of the 2001 season for 3 years.
Superannuation.
Played for the club side, Saracens. And the game was a fair distance apart, you know, Northern Hemisphere, Southern Hemisphere. By the time I finished in 3 years, it was very close. And, you know, I thought that England would win that World Cup in 2003, which they did, Berkey. I think he missed a few tackles in that game. Mm. And then...
off the bench.
I think nowadays, when you look at it, and the difficult part for Australian rugby is that there's so many players looking to go offshore. And I think what Dave Rennie and even Michael Checker was very important, and I rate Michael Checker highly, is that the gold jersey for Australia has got to mean a lot, and it does now. And players like a Samu Karevi, who we saw go to Japan last year, there's really got to be that lure of playing in the gold jersey. It's got to really mean something. There's, yes, I know that obviously dollar-wise offshore is probably maybe 25% more than what you're going to receive in Australia.
Mm.
But I think that lure of playing in that gold jersey for a Rugby World Cup, for a Bledisloe Cup, for, you know, Four Nations trophies, that's got to mean a lot.
Best ground you've played on, Timmy, around the world?
I tell you what, Berkey, in those early days, Ballymore was pretty special.
Oh, wasn't it?
You know, it was only, so I think it was about 19,000 people that it took, and people up on the hill. There wasn't many grounds you played on up on the hill, 4X Hill. And it was funny because most of the people used to turn up at half time to sort of watch the game and then be part of the Bundy Bar festivities after the match. So that was pretty good.
Days.
And then, I mean, Lansdowne Road in Dublin was pretty special. It you know, had terraces at either end.
Yeah.
You know, they said it took to the 38,000. I think they packed it into about 50,000 in most test matches.
Yeah.
It was a pretty special time. And you finished the game, and as soon as you finished the game, you handed 4 or 5 pints of Guinness.
Oh, isn't that good?
Tim, appreciate you coming on this morning, mate, and the hairdryer. Geez, wait until Loz and Pup hear about this. They will. Don't worry about that.
There's some things that stay in the vault, Tim. Come on.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. Well, there's plenty of others. Don't worry, Berkey.
How good. Have a good morning, mate, and look forward to this year. And Super Rugby AU is going to be a beauty.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Good to chat.
Tim Horan there.
Good on you, Timmy.
The hairdryer.
The hairdryer. I mean, Timmy, if we're going to... he's off the line now. We're going to sledge. He used to... The reason why the jerseys got regulated to sign these days for autographs, that kind of stuff, because we used to do signing, and we used to do like 300 jerseys in a go. And at the end of it, you look under Horan's seat, Timmy's seat, and there'd be 15 jerseys under there. And we're going, where's that going? He goes, oh, mate, I need a new fridge. I need a new lawnmower. I need a... So now if you want a jersey,
tell you what,
it's all stamped and registered.
You rugby blokes, you were telling us yesterday about the rort with the tickets. Now Horan's keeping the jerseys.
These are the old days. This is when you worked at Liquorland. I was working at Eastwood Rugby Club and going to university. Thanks for coming.